Okay, right. So, okay, I think we are rolling. Welcome to this session, session four, putting visualization to use. I know some of you haven't been here before, and I'll just do a quick recap of what we've been through so far. All the sessions are pretty much self-contained, so even if you miss one, obviously there's the notes and the podcast, so you won't miss anything. So this is a series of, I don't know, what is it, 11 sessions? Yep, 11 so far. One every 2 weeks. Although next session won't be on in 2 weeks' time because I shall be at the Real Life Artemis Gathering teaching healing and visualization. So we'll be back for about another month before you see me again, probably. So in these sessions, I go through my experiences with visualization and projection, plus a few other subjects that are quite close to my method. Now, you can see that I'm probably, it's probably quite clear that I'm not a Wiccan. I follow an Egyptian goddess called Salket. She is a scorpion goddess of healing and protection, and I've been with her since I was very little, which is now almost 30 years or so. I'll also mention now, because you'll no doubt find it, and I'm highly excited that I have my first book out in the next few months. It goes to print possibly in the next week, by the awesome author Tutlian Penry is my thing, and I think it's at the Wolf and Howl Press. If I can even type it, I think that might be it. Off the hand, maybe. I've probably got links anywhere, but anyway, I think the notes will have all the details on my blog, obviously, which I've already mentioned, which is www.kiahakey.me.uk. But more back to this session. Recapping the previous few, the first one was an introduction generally of the whole series. Then I explained in the second one what visualization is and what it means to me. The third, I went through my guided working that I use. I deconstructed it and described some of the issues that pop up and how to deal with them. This session is more about the practical uses for visualization. Some of them you'll be familiar with, I would imagine, and some will start to veer towards the astral projection and other various projections methods. Now, if you have any questions, if you can think of anything you want to ask, or if you want me to repeat something or explain something because you don't quite understand or because the Second Life voice packed up, then do say, and I'll stop and I can recap it. It's not a problem. If you don't want the world to see, then you can IM me and I'll talk to you some other time. You can't think of anything, don't worry, you don't have to. I'm always around. Throw me an IM here, or find me on Facebook, or Twitter, or on my blog, or email me, I don't care. I make it easy for you to find me. So I'm happy to talk to anybody about any aspect of these subjects, or just anything really. Some people will notice that I do not stop talking, so not to worry. Now, the first half of this session is building on the previous ones, which I'll recap or embellish a little bit for those that weren't here. What about the working environment and the methods that we can use to do the visualization, and obviously the practical stuff. Then after that, I'll explore the other aspect that I use visualization for, as I just said, is the projection side. So, practical uses. Most books you pick up will, one stage in their book will discuss about the things that you can do with visualization, and pretty much they all agree on many of the facets. Visualization can bring significant change to your life. Most often it's in the concept of wishing, which as children we've probably all done anyway through the blowing out of candles on our birthday cake and so on. Now, it's a great tool and it is really effective, so I'm going to discuss that, hopefully. Don't forget, if you've got a question, throw it up. I will try and get to it. Now, wishing, and I'll refer to it as wishing, or you could say creative visualization is what some people call it. Oh, we have someone coming in. Hello. Hello. I don't think you've missed anything. Hello. Are you able to hear me? Let's sort out the new arrival. Me. Okay, right. We're just about to get going on. Yes, cool. Wow. Second Life voice rocks again. Okay, we'll go. If you've got a question, just to let you know, just if you've got a question, throw it over in local chat. Okay, in bits and pieces. Okay. I might have to investigate more this side for next time. Or it could just be generally Second Life again. Who knows? Okay, so if you do have a question you want me to repeat, just say, and I will happily repeat. I don't want you to miss anything. Now, with wishing, it's all about setting the goal. And it has to be a goal that is attainable, reasonably attainable, I have to say. Obviously, we have wishes that are far beyond what we could probably achieve, and the whole point of the craft is to bring about those changes. But I'll explain a little bit more why they need to be reasonably attainable as we go. Now, also, apart from being reasonably attainable, don't be too specific. They are harder to come about. Now, I found a correlation here between if you have a wish that is broad, it takes less time to meet that goal. If it's very specific, it takes longer. Now, my reasoning there is, it's all about cause and effect and probability. I see wishing, visualization, and magic in general are the classical thing is conformity into your will. So you are affecting the causality, event, the cause and event, and they build on build and build to reach your goal. So, if the wish is wide, you open up to a greater probability of possible outcomes that will effectively reach your goal, but you haven't said specifically, I want a particular goal to arrive. Therefore, the probability is it will arrive quick. Whereas if it's specific, a very precise chain of events have to occur in sequence to meet that particular goal. Therefore, it could take longer. So that's how I see wishing working. Now, unlike spellcraft, where you tend to create a spell, put your intent in, and push out the intent and then let it go, with wishing, I've, from experience and from a variety of books that I've read over time, that you need to refresh the desire for the goal that you are trying to achieve with the wish. Now, this serves a number of purposes that I've found. That everybody makes a wish, and it's sometimes just a frivolous one out of the spur, thinking, oh, I wish it would stop raining. Well, that's just a general wanting of something. That's not a definite goal. Now, so that the cause and effect chain that I've just mentioned needs to be continued, especially if it's a long set of chain of cause and events, the refresh of the desire for that wish just ensures those chain of events occur. If it was, okay, for example, a frivolous wish and it was to happen, then I think we would be in all problems, because if you could think of, oh, I wish that person would just shut up and they suddenly just killed over dead, then we wouldn't want that, because it was just a natural response. Whereas, okay, I'm going off a nasty thing here, talking about people dying and that, but if it was one that you definitely wanted for them to shut up in some way about something, then you would need to refresh that to ensure your intent achieves that goal. I think it's some kind of a way of a break to stop you from just wishing for everything and it all happening, because it just doesn't work that way. So what I tend to do is recall that desire, that wish, and then dwell on it for a little while, and then push it back out. Another aspect to the wishing process I've found highly effective is to act as if you've already got your wish. It reinforces your desire and your intent to reach that goal. Obviously, if you say wish for more money, you can't go out and then just blow $100,000 on your credit card because you think at some point you're going to get it, because that might... I'll come back to the actual wishing requirement in a second, but you just have to act, not do, if you get my point. It's the frame of mind thinking, oh, well, I've got that now, and I feel good, and it's helped me progress somewhere in my life, or it's made me a better person, or it's bought something better for me. It seems to help. Now, wishing, all this wishing is great, we can all wish for things, but like I mentioned about the money and the someone shutting up and dying, you have to be careful of what you wish for, because it may just happen. That sort of phrase gets thrown around quite a bit, and I say you have to be really careful with wishing. Because, as I say, you're dealing with cause and effect, and if you keep it wide open, you have an awful lot of possibilities for an outcome. What you actually wanted, really, but you kept the door wide open as possible, may be not what you actually really desired. Here's an example. The best example, money, the requirement for money. That's usually a good one that people want. Everybody could do with, especially these moments, they're hard times and people wish for more money. Now, the problem there, and this is where being specific is more important than being open, because of the wish requirement. Now, I could say, I want more money. Now, for that to come about without a specific objective to achieve that, obtain that money, a number of events could occur. The range of possibilities is that a member of the family could die and I inherit the money. I've achieved my money, but it's someone's died for it. I might have had an accident, and then for I claim on insurance. I've got some money, but I've hurt myself. And there's possibly a load of other things, you know, some, who knows, that I could find something that's some money on the floor that somebody's lost and who desperately needs it more than I do. I've got some money, but somebody has lost out that needs it more than me. So, wishing is dangerous. So, you have to seriously consider your intent and the, I wouldn't say every possible outcome, but to seriously consider, why do you need this? Do you need it? And what are the possible avenues for the outcome to go through? So then you need to make it specific if you have to, but that'll increase the time. But then if it's that important to you, then it could be worth the wait. And as an example of time scales, some I've had that are specific have taken a couple of decades or so to manifest. Some have taken weeks, months. It's so variable. And I wouldn't say it's all down to the size or complexity. You know, it's cause and effect can occur. For example, right now, it's probable there's anything is possible right now. It is possible that I could have an elephant go charging through the front door here. Now, it's highly unlikely. On the event horizon, I would say that is really low down, but it could still occur. We had a carnival a week or so ago. There could have been an elephant in there, for all I know, and it could have just escaped and come hurtling down the road into the house. Who knows? Events are interesting, so be extremely careful. Now, as far as the intent, like a spell goes as well, when you specify the wish, you create the intent, and you would probably write something or say something, and that is where you need to be very precise with the intent to back it up. That you don't say I want some more money. I would probably could say I want some more money from the lottery. That's being precise, but it's still opening up wide things, because the lottery, I could make, you know, I could win 10 quid or 100,000 or a million or so. So who knows? Now, what we got? Now, as well as bringing things into existence through wishing, you can also use them to stop things from happening. It's a multiple use. I tend to also use visualization for trying ideas out, for modeling a situation. Sometimes, for example, you might think, okay, I'm going for a job interview and there's a certain situation that I want them to talk about, or I don't want them to talk about, and how would I deal with that if they were to say it, or this is how I want it to go because I really want that job, so let it happen that way. or even if it's a social situation, you know, you got something going on in a family event and you want it to go a certain way, then you can run through what people would say and do. It is a very useful tool. Now, the best way to perfect that method and actually to enhance any visualization work is to, say, take a photo of a wedding or a social event that you are at, so you know what's happened in the context of that photo, and you can then let's see, someone wanting TP. Okay, we got someone coming in. So where was I? Oh yeah, photos. Let's see. Okay. Right. Okay, let's just sort this new arrival. Silane, can you hear me? Okay, so let me just settle this person down and then I'll get back to this little bit. Time is moving on. Okay, good. Right, okay. Yes, so this is generally a good thing, either for wishing an event to occur or just to stretch the mental muscles on visualization. So you take a photo of the social event that you were at. Whether you're in the photo or not doesn't matter, but as long as you know what happened during this context of this photo and the people concerned, it can be quite interesting to use this photo to model the event as you remember and to play with the event as it unfolded. Now, what I mean is, say it was a wedding and the best man was going to stood up to do his speech. Now, what would happen if you were to suddenly get up and start a food fight, for example? And what would people's responses be? Would people join in? Would people moan or whatever? It could be quite interesting because these people you know in that situation, you know their personalities and the feel of the people and your own personalities. It's fun to model how people respond. To start with, you could just analyse the situation as people occurred, but as you get more into it, you just let it run like a dream event, and just have a play, and it can be quite interesting. I've done a few myself, and I mentioned at the real life Artemis gathering last summer. People did find this quite an interesting idea. So, actually, I might bring it up again in a couple of weeks' time when I'm there. So, it can be fun to play with. Now, another aspect of wishing, and somebody mentioned this at a previous one of these sessions, was how do I deal with wishing when I have a strong connection with my goddess? Now, the answer I gave, and it's one I'm quite fond of, is that I treat wishing as going into a supermarket. I walk through the door. If I know how to find my wish, how to find the objective and do it, i.e. I know where in the shop I need to go to get it, then I will go to that shelf, that aisle, that shelf, and pick it up and do it. Sometimes I don't know. I'm not sure how to what I need to do to achieve this objective, or what kind of process I need to reach this objective with this wish, or is it the one I truly need? I don't know if it's the one I really need. So what I then do is just ask my goddess, the shop assistant, to tell me where I need to go to find it, or better still, I'll get her to go and get it herself. It seems to serve the good description of how I do it. I tend to let my goddess do as much as possible because she knows it better than me most of the time. She's always there with me. And so she goes looking most of the time. Now, other uses for visualization, and it's one I come back to in, let's think, what sessions? That in session 7 for amulets, and that is in using visualization for amulets and talismans. Now, for me, I find I don't have jewelry on me. I'm not really a jewelry person, so I don't have, say, an Egyptian Ankh symbol necklace. It just bugs me. I don't have any pentagrams, pentacles, or whatever jewelry around most of the time. It just gets in the way of what I do. So I tend to work with mostly visual forms of amulets. Now, you can see that I've already mentioned that I follow an Egyptian path. My goddess is Egyptian. Now, sometimes people become surprised that I don't use hieroglyphics that much as my preferred form of visualized amulets. So, I tend to use the runes, Nordic runes. Here's an example of one. The Rad rune. Sometimes people call it Rad. I call it Rad. It's the one that looks like a capital R. So it's one that is associated with travel, from what I've understood. Now, I would project that in front of me when I'm driving my car to make things a lot easier for my journey. So that seems to... Okay, what's someone saying to me? Okay. Is the voice getting too bad? Is everybody still able to hear? Because I think some people are getting a bit lost with the voice breaking up. Okay. Right, from my side it doesn't look that bad. Okay, so it looks like it could be a second life issue then. Oh good. I'm glad it's not just completely me then. Oh dear. It's the new upgrades they've done. It seems to be a problem. Right, okay. Let's see how far we got. Okay. We'll see how far we can go before people get really fed up. So I'll come back to amuletic use in session 7, so I'll skip that for the moment. Another one that I actually do have a full session on that I find for practical use of visualization, and that is thought forms. I cover that as a complete session in session 10. Now, they are very potent forms of, well, whether they're visualization per se is up to discussion, really, but they are created through a visualization process. Again, I have a full session on that later on. So I won't go into that detail considering we have some issues with sound. Now, okay, let's take it. That's another aspect that I tend to use, practical for visualization. Now, most of my activity generally works through projection and through lucid dream, basically non-physical working. So I do a little bit of physical stuff. It's sometimes useful to keep your hand in the physical side, you know. It's physical rituals are still important, but not completely for everything I do. Now, I have a visualized temple that I go to. Now, that again is, I think, the next session. No, it's not. It's session 6, where I describe the visualized temple that I use for practical working. But the whole point that I'm coming to is that I have a set of tools that I have created physically, like a wand and broomstick and a thamy and so on, that are physical items here, and they're just over the other side of the room from me. Now, obviously, when I'm in my visualized astral temple or whatever, I don't have those physical things because I'm not physically using them. So what I have done is created visualized tools at the temple, purely visualized them, and created visualized copies of these physical items. Now, as far as I'm concerned, when I'm in that visualized temple, those physical items are real to me in the visualized form. To achieve that kind of thing, I have taken these objects and regularly examine them in detail to take in as much detail visually, the texture as well, the weight, the balance in the wand and the dagger, and just to know that when I'm projecting, that is how the item is. And as far as I'm concerned, when I'm in this visualized workspace, I have that physical item there. Now, that is also very useful for when I'm also in the physical ritual, because it means I don't have to have the physical item with me. If I was out and about and I fancied impromptu ritual of some kind, I don't know, might be at the park or in the far woods or something, and I needed my wand, I could visualize the wand in my hand. And although I cannot physically see it because it's not there, it's not real, but I have enough knowledge, the feel, I can visualize it in my hand as if I do have it. And it's open-eyed visualization is tricky because you can see it's not there, but you can see it is there. A book, I can't remember what book it was I was reading. Oh yes, Konstantinos's book on evocation. And it reminded me of something I'd forgotten, that learning to scry and to do divination is a very good way to learn to do open-eyed visualization. You tend to do it anyway. For example, if you raise a circle, cast a circle, and you draw on the floor what you visualized as a glowing line, you tend to think it's still there. Now, that is open-eyed visualization, and that might not be sophisticated as, say, visualizing a wand in your hand, but it's still open-eyed visualization, and it's still something you can develop further. And as Constantinus said, it's through scrying, you will work up and build on that visual cortex. Something I've just covered, I covered in the previous session, and if you weren't there, and it's not in the notes. Now, people do struggle with some part of visualization in that they try to construct the whole environment around them. Now, we are, as a human, we have our eyes at the front of our face, which is the sign of a predator, binocular vision, precision, focus point. We are predators. So when you look at something, everything around the peripheral is sort of foggy and phased out and not quite distinct until you shift your focus to it, and then it becomes more stronger. So when you visualize, you don't have to visualize everything. You just visualize what you see in front of you, and the mind can also build things up. For example, you see, you know, you're in a forest. You don't have to visualize every single tree and every single leaf on that tree, because you know it's a tree until you focus on it, and then you could start to draw it in. But that's just a side thing. Let's go away from there. Right, what else have we got? Okay, we've only got about 15 minutes left. I shall quickly go on to the ritual workings on astral plane. Now, I've mentioned this astral temple, this visualized temple. Now, I created this about 15 years or so ago. I'm not exactly certain. I'd have to check up on my notes. I've got the date, I think. Well, I've got a rough idea. It's been a long time anyway. Now, the whole point of that was I became familiar with this concept of astral magic fairly early in the early 90s in my investigations and into chaos magic, where this kind of thing was discussed as a means to do ritual. It appealed to me because I had already been playing with visualization, and I'm a highly creative person and highly imaginative, so visualization was my main thing. And my goddess suggested she would like to, instead of evocation of her to the physical, which is off and on tricky, some success, some not. It was a lot of mucking around just for a little bit of time, to be honest. So she suggested we meet halfway at an astral location where it would be less effort for her and less effort for me to meet her. So I created this visualized temple, which I'll go into, and as I say, in session 6. Now, I don't have much record documentation on my astral journeys early on. I don't have much recollection. At the time, I wasn't fully documenting everything, which was really annoying. I just put the odd bit, oh, I saw this tunnel and I went here and that was it. But I find, generally, astral working a lot more useful than physical. Physical is great. I use it every now and again. For example, I love using fire magic. I tend to fire scry, and it's just amazingly brilliant. So, but as far as combining visualization and astral magic together, seems to be just brilliant. Now, I then go into, in the later session, I'll talk about how I achieved all this. But has anyone actually done astral projection? I can't remember if you have, because I think you've been a few times, Lily. I can't remember if you said you have. Yes, you have. Okay, right. Not to worry. The next session, which won't be in 2 weeks, as I said, because I'm at the Real Life Artemis Gathering, that is actually on the physical process of this thing was of achieving projection. So I won't go into that here. So as I say, visualization has been highly beneficial as far as projecting, and I think it's actually made the astral working so much more more viable as far as actually doing it. Mainly because the creation of, oh right, Llewellyn Practical Guide. I haven't seen that one. Okay, my best one ever is by Robert Bruce, and it is Astral Dynamics. Absolutely fantastic. I cannot stress how brilliant that book is. It is really good. And if you get the late second edition, it's been updated quite a bit. So go for it. I learned quite a lot from that one. Mainly because when I started doing projection, it was spontaneous projection when I was around 7. Was you at the oh well, Vicar was at the healing circle on Thursday when I mentioned this. So yes, I was saying that I was doing spontaneous projection when I was little, and I didn't know what it was, and so I've only in the last few years worked out what most of these events that occurred, what they actually mean. And the words to describe them. So if I needed to talk to somebody, I now know what words I should use to describe the events that occurred. For example, quite often they were etheric projection. So at the time, it was a bit mad because I would float out of my body and my nose would be on the ceiling of the bedroom, and then I would sort of swim out the window across the fields. And well, I thought I had some idea that was out of body experience because I was familiar with that term, but I wasn't familiar with what actually I was doing, how I achieved it, because it was spontaneous, what was the trigger, and what was I actually doing. But now I know that was etheric projection as opposed to astral and mental projection. So but anyway, getting back to this temple thing that I got, I don't have many documentation on where this temple actually exists. I suspect it's somewhere like, I thought it was astral, but I'm not entirely certain. I think it's a mental projection of some kind. Mainly because when I first started it, I was a point of light within the environment that I created. I had no form. And so I'm pretty certain from the things I read that that was a mental projection, not astral, because I had no body. So therefore, I had to then create a body to work with. But yeah, visualization, I think, certainly helped in what I did and what I still do. It's and as far as I'm concerned, they are two ends of the same thing. They are the same kind of work, but visualization is more internal, whereas projection is visualization but external. Your consciousness has shifted from one internal to external. Maybe, who knows? Don't know. But anyway, I'll stop the rambling now. I think everyone's had enough of the crackling noise, probably. So, before I stop the recording for the podcast, does anybody have any questions. Oh, thanks for that book, Lily. I'll dig that out. Thanks for enduring the pain. You can always pick up the podcast. I will prepare it for upload in the next few days. So if there's no questions, I will stop recording for any of those that choose to listen in later. No, and okay, no problem. Okay, right, so as I say, usually this is every 2 weeks, but the one in 2 weeks' time will be not on because I will be at the real life Artemis gathering. So then we have a month. The next one after that, then, let me just give the date, will be, come on, calendar. Okay, that will be the 11th. I won't be here. Next one will be the 25th of August. Wow, that's a long way away. So, thank you for coming. I'll hang around now and I will stop recording. Thanks for listening and for being here.